It's thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I wonder which candidate would be a better friend of Israel.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just tweeted this out. I'm more concerned with America's relationship with Israel for America's sake than for Israel's sake. Yes, I'm fully aware that America pours in a lot of money to Israel and is the key nation when it comes to Israel's defense and its defense budget. Obviously, Israel defends itself, but the American budget helps it immensely. And I'm aware of America's role and the Security Council and the UN, often the only one that will veto a resolution condemning Israel when it seems the whole world is rising up against Israel. But ultimately, I am more concerned with America's relationship with Israel for America's sake than for Israel's sake. 866-348-7884. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Any Jewish-related question of any kind that you have, my joy to take your call. If you believe that the Jews are controlling the whole world, that the Jews control all the banks and the media, and that the Rothschilds and the Illuminati and whoever control the world, well, give me a call. I'd love to hear your evidence. Or if you've got a legitimate question about Israel today, or about Jewish interpretation of Scripture or Jewish tradition or the Hebrew language, I'd love to take your calls. They don't have to relate to the presidential elections in any way or America in any way. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-348-7884. Something outrageous, though, I want to bring to your attention immediately. Have you ever seen videos from Prager University? Prager University, that's what it's called. Well, it's not a full-blown university, but Dennis Prager, one of the leading Jewish thinkers in America today, longtime radio host and columnist and author, not a believer in Jesus, of course, just to be clear on that. Dennis Prager has these terrific videos that could be 5-7 minutes long with many, many different guests, some famous, some not so well-known. And they will talk about history, the Middle East conflict. They can talk about contemporary issues like Black Lives Matter and have an African-American on discussing those things. Many issues they'll discuss, Islam, etc. And quite remarkably, some of the videos from PragerU are now listed as restricted on YouTube, meaning that you have to be at least 18 years old to sign in because there is potential inappropriate and objectionable adult and sexual content. You have to keep that away from children. JJ, grab clip number 10. This is Raymond Ibrahim, author of the Al-Qaeda Reader, explaining what radical Islam is and showing how Muslims and non-Muslims alike can help to defeat it. Clip 10.
Since the beginning of the 20th century, every generation has been confronted with a lethal threat to freedom and fundamental human rights. Free people defeated the last two totalitarian threats, fascism and communism. If we want to preserve freedom, we, non-Muslims and Muslims alike, will have to defeat the threat of our time, Islamism.
Okay, so here he's appealing to both Muslims and non-Muslims, calling them to defeat radical Islam, the most dangerous ideology. And that is now under restricted content on YouTube. Now, look, I imagine the vast majority of people watching these videos are at least 18 years old. But on what basis is this being restricted? On what basis is it potentially inappropriate or objectionable adult sexual content? Obviously not anything sexual, but what makes this inappropriate and objectionable adult content? We come back. I'm going to play another clip. It's even more crazy that this is restricted. This is all-out bias. That is nothing less than that. It's YouTube radical liberal bias.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The Israel Defense Force, the IDF, does more to safeguard the rights of civilians in a combat zone than any other army in the history of warfare.
All right, those were the words of Colonel Richard Kemp. He was the commander of British forces in Afghanistan, was in Israel during its war against Hamas in 2014, and analyzes whether Israel's military is ethical, evil, or somewhere in between. This is on Prager University video, and it is about Israel, the world's most moral army. This video has also been put by YouTube on the restricted list. Again, meaning you have to be at least 18 years old. So if you just happen to not have a YouTube account and you just want to view this, you're going to have to now sign in and verify. So through some account, sign in and verify that you're at least 18. Okay. And if you happen to be a 16-year-old interested in this, unless you can get your parents' account to watch it, you can't watch this. Restricted mode. This is what is used. As the Prager petition on this says, many people enable restricted mode in order to keep inappropriate and objectionable adult and sexual content away from the children, not to prevent them from watching animated, age-appropriate educational videos. And there are 21 of the Prager University videos that are now in restricted mode by YouTube. Are the police racist? Why don't feminists fight for Muslim women? Why did America fight the Korean War? Who's more choice, Europe, pro-choice, Europe or America? What ISIS wants? Why are there still Palestinian refugees? Are one in women five raped at college? Islamic terror, what Muslim Americans can do? Did Bush lie about Iraq? Who not to vote for? Men and the power of the visual. Is America racist? The two clips we played, Israel, the world's most moral army, and radical Islam, the most dangerous ideology. The most important question about abortion, why do people become Islamic extremists? Don't judge blacks differently. What is the university diversity scam? He wants you. Israel's legal founding. Pakistan, can Sharia and freedom coexist? This is absolute insanity to put these on a restricted list on YouTube, and it makes you wonder what's going to be next. And YouTube, owned by Google, right? They could just theoretically restrict anything for any reason. And what does that do for freedom and free expression and the ability to reach the maximum possible audience? 866-348-7884. I've got an important announcement for you, and then I want to change subjects. But please listen carefully. Yesterday, during the same hour, I spent 1 hour interviewing Pastor Bill Johnson. We post it on social media, so our social media reaches close to 500,000 people directly. I mean, this week, just Facebook has reached over 30 million total. But in terms of the direct ones that are following us, we're probably 500,000 or more. So we posted on Facebook and Twitter that I'd be interviewing Pastor Bill Johnson, and that if you had a question or concern, if you questioned things from Bethel, if you questioned Jesus culture, music, if you questioned any of the things associated with the movement that's come out of Bethel, the revival movement, to please call in and raise your questions and concerns. Now, interestingly, people called in with completely unrelated questions that weren't for Bill Johnson. They were for me, just unrelated doctrinal questions. So we didn't bring those on the air. And that's the way it's going to be every day. If a call is off topic, we're not going to bring them on the air. But nobody called with criticisms. And then afterwards, I'm seeing on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, he's a heretic. How dare you associate with him? Now, none of these people called. Maybe they didn't know about it. One guy said, well, I didn't know. Otherwise, I would have called. Fine. I mean, we posted it. We gave advance hours in advance that day so that people could be ready and know they could call in. But here's what I want to do. This coming Tuesday, which is October 18th, the same hour, I'm going to do it for a whole hour, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. October 18th, Tuesday of this coming week. It's going to be non-charismatic call-in day. Now, this is different than cessationist call-in day, where I ask you to prove your point and argue with me, debate me as to whether the gifts and power of the Spirit were for today. I'm not asking you to do that. I've done that a few times and didn't really get any strong calls, to be honest. We got calls, but no real strong calls for scriptural arguments. But this is a day for you to call in, not to debate me, but with honest concerns you have. What about this? What about that? I can't answer for Bill Johnson or others, but I can answer for myself. Okay? I have great concerns about certain things I've seen in the charismatic movement. I have great concerns about certain things I've seen in the non-charismatic movement. I myself would identify as charismatic or Pentecostal and been part of that for basically 45 years, the better part of 45 years with one short stint accepting that. But that's what I am because of the Word, confirmed by my experience. But either way, because of the Word, nonetheless, it doesn't mean I agree with everything that's done in the name of the charismatic or the Pentecostal movement. So just mark it on your calendar, okay? Again, that's going to be Tuesday, October 18th, between 2 and 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Line of Fire, non-charismatic call-in day. I welcome your calls with your honest concerns. And it's not the day to go ballistic, attacking in a nasty spirit, because I'm not here to fight you, all right? I'm here to help sort out truth from error, think through together with you what Scripture says and what guidelines we have for judging and discerning. So hopefully it's enough advance notice that you'll be able to call in. I don't know that I'm going to be able to respond to questions on social media. It depends on how many calls we get that day, but I want to give you a heads up on that. Okay, the candidates, where do they stand on Israel? Who would be a better friend of Israel? I want to repeat what I tweeted out right before, literally seconds before the broadcast began. Candidly, I'm more concerned about America's relationship with Israel for America's sake than for Israel's sake. Yes, I am one of those who believes that God does judge nations based on how they treat Israel and the Jewish people. Not because of Israel's righteousness, not because of Israel's goodness, but because of God's eternal promises and purposes. Now, let me be clear on this. I don't believe that God, who is a God of justice, will bless unfair, positive treatment of Jewish people. In other words, I'm not saying that if, God forbid, Israel was guilty of some horrific atrocity in dealing with innocent Palestinians, and a thousand innocent Palestinian lives were taken willfully and without excuse by the Israelis, that the right thing to do is to say, well, we stand with Israel either way because we don't want to curse Israel and God will curse us. No. That would mean that God is blessing injustice, and that God is blessing those who stand with injustice. And that's not what a true friend does either. But it means that we recognize that God has brought the Jewish people back to the land. We realize that it is Satan who wants to destroy and wipe the Jewish people out and remove them from the land. And it's Satan who ultimately wants to keep Jerusalem out of Jewish hands. And that in recognition of this all-out battle and assault, we stand with Israel, and when Israel does wrong, by standing with Israel, we call on Israel to do what is right. By standing with Israel, we also stand with Palestinians and others in the Middle East for what is best and for God's blessing. But we recognize again the God who scattered the Jewish people is the God who regathered the Jewish people. The God who scattered Israel out of the land is the God who brought them back to the land. Now more than 6 million strong, obviously a significant number because of Jewish history and the slaughter of 6 million Jews in the Holocaust. And we recognize that there is a supernatural hatred towards Israel, that there is a supernatural hatred against Israel, that it is Satan who ultimately wants to wipe out the Jewish people. And when we see this supernatural hatred, we stand against it and we don't give in to it. So ultimately, when I look at America standing with Israel, yes, I know, I recognize, I understand that America does help Israel and that America on a major level is Israel's best ally. And of course, Israel is America's best ally in the Middle East. But ultimately, in my humble point of view, I do believe that America's fate hangs in the balance more as to how it treats Israel than Israel's fate hangs in the balance by how America treats her. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be right back.
Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Before I give you my thoughts about the candidates and weigh in on a few other things, yeah, and just the candidates in terms of Israel, we're not talking politics, anything beyond that. I want to play a previous interview recorded earlier this week from Iraq, from northern Iraq, Kurdistan, with Dalton Thomas. He and his family, wife and four kids, are serving there. And he is the producer of the brand new movie City of the Great King, which focuses on Jerusalem and the controversy surrounding Jerusalem. It's part of our special resource offer this week. JJ, let's grab clip number 14. This is my interview from earlier this week with Dalton Thomas about Jerusalem and about this brand new video.
Hopefully, this issue of Jerusalem, people begin to see it not as a land dispute issue or an issue of national borders and territories or modern contemporary geopolitics, but they begin to think of it in terms of Christology and the person and work of Jesus. Who is he? What is he like? What does he care about? What is he doing? Because to me, those are the questions we need to be asking. And when you get answers to those questions, you see Jerusalem very differently than you do if you're in one of the two dominant narratives of either replacement theology or nationalistic Zionism that marginalizes the gospel.
Mm. So for Dalton Thomas, this is a message about Jesus. This has to do with Jesus. That we're talking about Jerusalem because it has to do with the Messiah and his purposes and his heart. It is, and notice he speaks about the two extremes, the one side, and nationalistic Zionism that's just pro-Israel, 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 almost blindly so, as if Israel could do no wrong ever. And the other side, a replacement theology that says the modern state of Israel is unrelated to the purposes of God and the promises of God. So Dalton doesn't hold to either of those. I'm on this new DVD. When you order it this week, and again, this helps us do these radio broadcasts. We sit together as a team. We discuss what resources would be best, and then the best price we can get them to you and discount everything for you to be a blessing to you as you're being a blessing to us. And then most importantly, you're getting great material. You'll get the DVD, City of the Great King. You can even download it. You'll get my very important lecture on Israel today. Is Israel an evil occupier? We debunk a lot of contemporary mythological propagandistic talking points. And then you'll also get some of the key interviews that we've done this week with guests who also appear on the City of the Great King. 866-348-7884. Both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have pledged their support of Israel. They have said it clearly. During their campaign, there were a couple of Trump quotes that were weak. When he was on MSNBC, for example, and was pressed where he stood on the conflict, the Palestinian conflict, he said, I don't want to weigh in now. I want to stay neutral. My people tell me that it's a really, really difficult negotiation to make, but I want to stay neutral so one side doesn't think I'm favoring the other. About a week later at Regent University, he made clear categorically we stand with Israel. And really, since that MSNBC interview and another comment about that time about staying, quote, neutral, which, by the way, I understood the point of it. You don't want to come into a negotiation saying I'm 100% on this one side. You want to come in and say, all right, let me moderate the dispute here. But that being said, his stance, his statements have been 100% consistently pro-Israel in the positive sense of the word since then. And the fact that his daughter Ivanka converted to Judaism to marry her husband, and that means the grandkids are considered Jewish. And I read that out of Trump's adult kids, they're either all married to Jews or dating Jews. So you're not going to be an anti-Semite and have that in your family and embracing your family at the same time. So I don't have any concerns about where Trump would stand on Israel. Hillary Clinton has also made plain that Benjamin Netanyahu is a friend and Israel is a friend and standing with Israel is very important. My concern is she's a Democrat. And the Democratic Party platform is massively weaker on this score than the Republican platform. And President Obama has been a terrible disappointment in many ways, especially with personal relationship with Netanyahu, so that most Israelis perceive Obama as being an enemy of Israel. So on that alone, I would have more confidence in Trump than in Hillary. Of course, only God knows, but that's what we're dealing with. But I would have more confidence in Trump than in Hillary for these reasons. Just look at the platforms. Look at the party platforms, because this is what they both say they stand behind. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to John in Cheltenham, Pennsylvania. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you. I think I really have something that's positive to contribute here, so please be patient with me.
Just remember, sir, you're on radio and we have breaks, so as concise as you can be.
Oh, I will be, sir.
Great.
I watch the Republican debate very, very closely. It's something that encouraged me tremendously, and it's the primary and almost the exclusive reason why I'm backing Trump. Is, in my view, the greatest threat to the world right now is a third world war that will involve Russia and possibly even a nuclear exchange. All the candidates, both on the Democratic and the Republican side, have demonized Russia, have demonized Putin. Clinton has made reference to Putin as a Hitler. Trump is the only individual that said that he would like to develop a positive relationship with Putin and Russia as a business partner and in the common realities of trying to defeat ISIS and terrorism. I am so concerned, sir. I'm just so, so concerned that if Hillary becomes president, there hasn't been a war that she hasn't backed. And I think Trump, even though I know he sounds bombastic at times and narcissistic or whatever else, the fact that he wants to develop a favorable relationship with Putin and Russia, I think is a very, very, very important factor. People don't realize that when the Soviet Union went under, there was a handshake agreement between Gorbachev and Reagan saying that NATO would not go beyond the Union of East and West Germany. We have reneged on that commitment, even though it was never in writing. It was a clear handshake. We've moved closer and closer to their borders with missiles, which is a hostile action. And what's going on in Syria, I think, I truly believe that Putin is simply trying to preserve a country Assad's its legitimate regime. I think we've been very adventuresome in terms of regime change. We made a complete disaster in Libya, a disaster in Iraq, and another disaster is in the working here in Syria. And Putin is simply trying to bring some stability. And now they're talking about all types of disagreements. And
yeah, and John, I got to jump in. I apologize, but I wanted to. You were on a roll there. I wanted to let you get everything out. Yeah, I don't think that everything Russia does is just for the purpose of stability, and I'm sure you agree with it. They have their motivations, but larger points to deal with. How did Hillary Clinton deal with issues like Libya, like Iraq, as Secretary of State, like Iran? And how does that impact Israel? Important points, John. Thank you for raising them.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Haganah, this is Israeli Defense Force. On April 22nd, at the height of the fighting in Haifa, it distributed an Arabic language circular noting its ongoing campaign to clear the city of all criminal foreign bands so as to allow the restoration of peace and security and good neighborly relations among all of the town's inhabitants. We implore you again to keep your women, children, and the elderly from the dangerous places, read the circular. This is to the Arab population of Haifa. And to keep yourselves away from gang bases that are still subjected to our retaliatory action. We do not wish to shed the innocent blood of the city's peace-loving inhabitants.
This is Michael Brown. That was my voice from the lecture, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? Part of our special resource offer this week, together with the brand new movie, City of the Great King, focused on Jerusalem. And then some of the highlight interviews we did about that new movie this week. So to find out more, you can order as many copies as you like. Go to thelineoffire.org. I'm joined in studio with a dear friend who has sometimes hosted this very show, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, my dear friend and co-worker, Scott Volk. Hey, Scott, great to have you on the broadcast.
Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Now we've got a tour coming up, our second ever tour of Israel together. How many have you done on your own now, would you say?
I have led 25. Can you believe that? 25 tours.
Do you get tired of it?
I never get tired of it. Sometimes my body gets a little weary towards the latter part of the tours. But the reason I don't get tired of it is because we see in front of us lives being changed, eyes being opened, people falling in love with the Jewish people and the Arab people and the nation of Israel. I never get tired of that.
Yeah, so we've got our next tour. I don't know if we have room left for anyone, but find out. Go to thelineoffire.org and find out about the Israel tour right on the homepage. There may still be time for you to get in. It's February 25th to March 6th. But Scott, when you do the tour, it's not a Palestinian bashing tour. It's a tour that's fair, that's compassionate, and that sometimes we even meet with Arab believers on the tour as well. But many people come over, they have a misconception that Israel is this terrible, oppressive, horrific force just trying to beat down the Palestinians and keep them down. Why is it that so many eyes and hearts are open when they do this tour?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I like to say is that if you look at Israel through a political lens, you'll end up hating either Arabs or Jews or both. If you look at Israel through a biblical lens, you'll end up loving both Arabs and Jews. And our tour is not a politically based tour. Obviously, whenever you talk about Israel, the issue of politics comes up. But because what we endeavor to do on our tours is to just approach Israel through a biblical lens, people end up leaving with a greater heart for Israel and a greater heart for the Arab people who live in Israel, a greater heart to see Muslims come to Messiah and a greater heart to see Jews come to Messiah. So I believe if you stick with the Bible and you don't mix politics in, that people are going to walk away saying, this was an amazing trip. We love it. And we introduce people to Arab leaders in the land who are serving side by side with Messianic leaders to see the kingdom of God come to the nation of Israel.
We've got 45 seconds before the break, but you're actually married to this concept, aren't you?
Yeah, I am married to this concept because as I was watching my wife walk down the aisle, on one side of the aisle were my unsaved Jewish relatives. On the other side were her Arab relatives. She's full-blooded Arab. I'm full-blooded Jew. My kids have a little bit of Isaac and a little bit of Ishmael in them. So it's encouraging to me in our household to see the God of Israel bringing Arab and Jew together. Why can't he still do that? He can do that. That's his heart, and that's his desire for Israel.
Yeah, friends, that's the gospel. That is the gospel. We come back. I want to ask Scott specifically about Jerusalem and the new movie, the new DVD documentary, City of the Great King. And we'll take your Jewish-related calls as well. Here's the number, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This issue of Jerusalem is a pastoral crisis. Right. I think that when it comes to the issue of the Davidic kingdom being restored on earth, the Christological, gospel theological implications of the issue of Jerusalem, I think, present a profound pastoral crisis for the church and the nations right now.
That was the voice of Dalton Thomas from the new documentary DVD, City of the Great King. I'm on it. My guest, Scott Volk, is on it. You're listening to The Line of Fire on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-348-7884. I'm sitting with my colleague, Scott Volk, looking at a report on Haaretz, Israeli newspaper. By the way, very much left-leaning, so hardly, you know, Israel can do no wrong type mentality. UNESCO. Okay, this is the UN, okay? This is a major UN entity. UNESCO backs motion nullifying Jewish ties to Temple Mount.
Unbelievable.
Due to Israeli efforts, no European country backed the motion, which describes the Temple Mount as holy to Muslims alone, without mentioning the site's significance to Jews. So this is where Jews go and pray every day. Jews come from around the world to go and pray here. This is the historic site of the temple, the very temple where Yeshua would have gone and taught and ministered. This is further outrage. There is no possible historical, cultural, spiritual, even logical basis for this. To me, this is just the manifestation of anti-Semitism in front of our eyes. What do you think, Scott?
I cannot believe it. When I saw that report this morning, I don't know that I've ever seen anything that was more jarring to me, because this is the city over which Jesus wept. This is the city over which he is coming back. And they're saying that this place where Abraham went to offer up his son, the place where the temple was built, the place where the glory of God came, has no Jewish connection whatsoever. It's the height of an anti-Semitic attack. It's the height of a let's get rid of Israel and move on with our lives kind of mentality.
And listen, when that part of Jerusalem was controlled by Muslims, Jews had no access to it.
Incredible.
When it's controlled by Jews, Muslims have access to it, and no non-Muslim can come into the Al-Aqsa Mosque or the Dome of the Rock and pray. I mean, Israel is very careful to protect Muslim sensibilities in that regard. So UNESCO, that's United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, outrageously says it's only Muslims that have a connection to it. Look, Jerusalem, the city of which Jews every year, next year in Jerusalem, the city to which they face when they pray every day, and in particular praying daily for the rebuilding of the temple at that very location.
Right.
No. Jews have no historic connection to this, only Muslims. Absolutely outrageous. Let's grab a call, Scott, and we can debate which one of us takes the call.
Sounds great.
All right, and then we'll get back to talking about Jerusalem. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Alan in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. Welcome to The Line of Fire.
Close, Dr. Brown. It's Lebanon, Connecticut.
Okay. All right.
Well, good Thoroughly Jewish Thursday to you, Brother Scott and Dr. Brown. Now, a contemporary issue over the last decades has been the equality of men and women. And I'm a little bit perplexed because I'm going to speak about procreation, which is mentioned in Leviticus 12 and 15. I'll keep it PG rated. If a man has an attempt at procreation in Leviticus 15, 16, or 18, and says he's ceremonially unclean for one day. If a woman does not, in her normal cycle, have a conception and a normal, what happens after that, she's unclean for 7 days. I don't understand that. Now, let me just add on Leviticus 12. If a female child is born, there's a double time of uncleanness to a male or a boy. Why is that different, and does that mean that we're not equal somehow?
You could look at this in the exact opposite way. You could say that there's more extended protection when it comes to a woman, that anything that has to do with a woman's uncleanness is given more time of separation for her. You could potentially read it like that, or you could read it and say, no, it is unequal. Certain aspects of a woman's monthly cycle and things like that obviously are things that don't pertain to a man, and therefore the woman needs special consideration. What you may not be aware of, Alan, is that in Judaism, women are not responsible to keep all of the 613 commandments because some of them are specifically time-related, and it's understood that a woman might not be able to keep them because of what's going on in her life, whether it's nursing a child, whether it's monthly cycle, whether it's some other thing in her life that life would require of her. So in that sense, there is a special leniency. As far as equality, though, it doesn't mean that there is the exact same role for each, but it means that each are of equal value in God's sight, each are of equal importance in God's sight. And normally, you'll see where Judaism goes, even though women in Judaism have a more restricted role, in traditional Judaism, that is. Men and women pray separately, and men are the religious leaders in the community. The separate prayer is so that there's no distraction, and men are not hearing a woman's voice or checking out a woman while they're supposed to be concentrating on God. So it is definitely patriarchal in terms of leadership. But the esteem, the love, the honor towards women in Judaism is certainly very high. And significantly, it's a country like Israel that has a female prime minister long before many other nations have had a senior leader that was female. And in a country like Israel, there is tremendous equality between men and women. And in fact, something that many find objectionable, but women are also required to serve in the Israeli army, except women serve 2 years, men three. Does that mean it's unequal in that respect, or is there just more consideration for a man's role in society, a woman's role in society, how it works out? Exactly why, Alan, it's twice the length of uncleanness if a female is born versus a male, I've never actually studied that in any depth. I will give it some consideration if I come up with anything that's worthwhile to share before the show is out during a break. I'll share it with you. But look at different roles, look at protection of women during certain times of the month. The woman's experience carrying a baby is different than a man's. The woman's experience having a baby, caring for a baby is different than a man's. And therefore, that's all built in to Israelite law. Certainly a patriarchal society, but certainly one that esteemed women. By the way, I know you didn't ask this, but even the law that if a man rapes a woman, that he is required to marry her and never divorce her all the days of his life, unless the father says, no, we're not going to do that, in which case there's a monetary fine. That's not to hurt the woman. That's to help the woman and protect the woman. There are cultures in which that exists to this day. You say, why? Because once the woman is raped, she's considered defiled, and other men would not want to have her. And this way, this man is required to have her and care for her properly and marry her and never divorce her. It's actually to protect her, which seems odd in our culture. But Alan, thank you for an important question. I appreciate it. So Scott, when you're in Israel and you're doing these tours, how is it that the Bible comes alive? I mean, you're not actually seeing the Bible reenacted, and yet suddenly the Bible just comes alive for everybody.
Yeah, when you're sitting on the Mount of Olives, looking at the Eastern Gate and the city of Jerusalem and the walls of that city, and you're reading, you're reading about Messiah returning and placing his feet on the Mount of Olives, it's almost as if you sense this is where it's going to happen. Or if you're riding on the Sea of Galilee and you just simply open the Gospels and you see all of the miracles that transpired in this small little square mile or square few miles of earth, you recognize here we are right where Jesus was. Or how about when you're standing on the southern steps of the temple where Jesus himself, we know he would have walked up those very steps. I tell you what, bro, you and I were together in London, England. We were in Buckingham Palace. I remember walking down the hallway where earthly kings walked, and that was to
and
me.
Prince Charles told us he played soccer with Prince Andrew told us he played soccer with Prince Charles
in that hallway. I mean, I felt like I was I obviously wasn't walking on holy ground, but I don't know that I ever walked on ground where earthly kings walked. But I'm telling you what, that paled in comparison to when we can stand in places and look at places that Jesus stood in and looked at. That's why the Bible comes to life. I'll never read the Sermon on the Mount the same, having been right in that very place where the sermon itself was given.
Yeah, and when you're standing there in the what would have been the outskirts of the temple and the steps, and you're looking down, okay, here's a mikveh, here's a place for baptism and immersion, and this could have been one of the places, right there, where Peter and the apostles were immersing people at Shavuot, Day of Pentecost. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Jerusalem, oh, Jerusalem, why won't you?